And welcome back to the Film Reel Cast. Summer's here. It's hot. People are happy. The atmosphere is just buzzing. So we thought, why not do a film where children get murdered? This is the perfect week to talk about this subject. So to do that, I've got Countdown Kelly back on the pod, named first for the second week running. Kelly, how are you?
I'm very impressed you've done that twice now. I think twice in all the times I've been on the pod, but twice in a row is quite consistent. I like it.
I love the way you kind of complimented me and foul language warning on this podcast cunted me off as well at the same time.
I'm good at that.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. To bring some normality, some intelligence, some balance onto the podcast, we have got, I'm going to call him Creamy Steve. Welcome.
Oh.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for assisting in getting my brand out there as well. I need
That's
it.
My pleasure. Well, Kelly, thoughts?
No one needs his brand at all.
Is that my brand?
My brand is expanding, by the way.
As we speak.
Is it now?
Technically, yes. I am expanding the Creamy Steve ice cream industry into pickled onions at the moment. So watch this space.
How big can your brand get now as we're talking?
Do you know what? I think with my talents, possibilities are just endless, really, aren't they?
Do you know, Kels is a good marketing person. I think she could help you get your brand bigger. Yeah? Could you make it bigger?
Definitely help get something bigger, that's for sure. For whether it's his brand or not, I don't know.
There we go.
We're talking about the brand. It's all about my brand.
Yeah, then I'm probably not the right person, though.
Never mind, it was worth a go. But back to the reason why we are all here this week again. We are doing The Black Phone 2021. And this film has been on Netflix, saw it at the cinema, really, really enjoyed it. I've wanted to do it for absolutely ages, and we just haven't done it. It's directed by Scott Derrickson, and one of the writers is Joe Hill, who is the son of Stephen King, which we'll talk about, because I think there are lots of links to Stephen King films throughout this. I don't know if anybody else knew that. Did anybody else know the Stephen King links?
No, that's news to me, actually.
I'm surprised. You're a man who does research. Kelly, I kind of know she's just, thanks to the podcast, getting introduced to the kind of the film industry and the use of televisions. But
picked up on the whole It connection. Thank you very much.
It connection.
Was actually, she wears a yellow jacket.
Yellow jacket and the bike and everything, yeah.
So what, people can't have yellow jackets and bikes?
It's very similar to the scene in It. That is all I'm saying. So I picked up on a connection. Yes, lots of people will have yellow jackets and ride bikes in the rain, just the same.
Do you feel
sure.
a bit pissed off now that you kind of mentioned it as in like bigged it up and Steve just kind of like off the
top? Oh, fuck no. Oh, no. I wouldn't expect anything less.
I guess a sense of annoyance there. Steve, do you?
Just a touch.
Yeah.
Nope. None at all.
Okay, he's spending it far too much already. Okay. But as I say, director Scott Derrickson, who directed Sinister, another film starring Ethan Hawke, who plays the grabber in this film. Sinister is another film that I don't think we've reviewed, but it's a really good film, Sinister. It came out of nowhere. I really enjoyed it. It's a really creepy horror film. I don't know if we've reviewed it or not. Have you guys seen Sinister?
I have only ever started watching it. I've never finished it.
Why is that? Do you think it's shit or scary?
I don't think it's either of those, to be honest. I don't think I've given it the chance it deserves because I've heard a lot of good things about it. So it's definitely something I want to watch properly just at the right time.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. And in the interest of balance, Kelly.
You can answer that question yourself.
See, if I would have said you'd not seen it, you would have rinsed me and we'd have had a whole kerfuffle about it and that would have been it. But I thought I'd do it the right way.
The sooner you learn you can't win, the easier life will be.
That's so true. But yeah, he did Sinister, which is a really, really creepy film. A great film. I totally recommend that. And this film, the cast is absolutely fantastic. It's mainly children, apart from Ethan Hawke, who plays the grabber. You've got Max, played by James Ranson. He's one of those guys, you see his face, you know what he's been in. And the kids are brilliant. Mason Thames, who plays Finney, is so, so good. And the girl, Madeline McCraw, who plays, is it Gwen, the sister? She yeah. is incredible. Absolutely amazing, and especially in some of the more upsetting scenes in this, where she's being beaten by the dad. I mean, she was in Disney, and she was doing a program on Disney, and she, when she did the audition for this, she was so good that she held on until she finished what she was doing to have this part. And she ad-libbed a lot of the scene, especially the domestic violence scene, and it's just fucking horrific. And Terrence, played by Jeremy Davis, who plays her dad, it must have been really difficult for him as well. And we'll talk about that in more detail when we get onto that scene. But the budget for this is 18 million and it made 161 million. I can say I contributed to that because it was just one of those trailers that looked fucking freaky. And what I want to kind of get on early days for this is it looked freaky because the mask that Ethan Hawke wears, who plays the grabber, is a really, really good mask. He wears three or four masks, doesn't he? And they're all creepy as fuck, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like interchangeable because you can change the mouth on them or you can wear the top or the bottom. So, but it is a really unsettling mask. It's horrible.
Yeah, I don't like masks in films. And I went through just picking a few films that have kind of iconic masks in there just to see where you think the Black Phone mask actually stands. So we've got Jigsaw, we've got the pig mask. That always freaks me out in Jigsaw. I don't like that mask. A pig with like long hair and everything. That's fucking awful. Are you guys familiar with that?
Well, I certainly am, yeah.
I am, yeah.
And do you think this is worse or the Black Phone's like better than that or the pig mask?
I would find the Black Phone mask way more creepy and freaky. The pig mask to me is more amusing than creepy.
Okay, I'm talking about if you were in a car park on your own and there was someone standing there wearing...
I mean, either of them would make me shit my pants.
Well, you don't need a mask to do that, do you?
Nope.
Exactly. Steve, which one's
worse?
That's
a whole other story.
I'd say I find the pig one more unsettling because it's a bit, just a bit... I think the mask in this film is quite clean cut. It's quite creepy, but I feel like once you've seen it, you can kind of get over it a bit. But the pig one's just weird and fucked up.
Yeah, I think it's something about the pig. It's just not nice. It's just really, really unsettling. And I just don't like it at all. It fucking freaks me out every time. Even though when I see the film now, that I know it's coming, but it still is something that I don't particularly want to look at. And the next one, I don't know if you've seen the film, but obviously you'd have known the mask because I've sent it out to you guys. A film called Smiley in 2012. And the mask in it is really horrible. I don't like the mask. It's one of those plain ones where it's just a smiley face. But it's just another iconic one where if you see it in another film, you know what film it's from, and I don't like it, but for me Black Phone wins.
Yeah, this one, it looks a bit fleshy, but it's just a bit too plain for my liking.
Yeah, it's awful. And the next one, Kel, I want to go to you. And it's only something that you found out today, because funnily enough you'd never actually watched it or heard of it. The Purge.
I had not.
It's starring Ethan Hawke again.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it, and I've never, you said the mask picture is quite famous. Funnily enough, I'd not seen that either. But I would still say, for me, the Black Phone is still the creepiest.
Okay, interesting. Well, I'll skip the next one because you wouldn't have seen that, the Chrome Skull in Laid to Rest. That's quite freaky. As we go on, I'll send a picture of that. Friday the 13th, the hockey mask. That is something you must have seen. Kelly, go for it.
I have seen that, yes. And again, the Black Phone still wins. I don't think there is a mask that I would say is as creepy as this one. I find this really quite disturbing.
Yes, I I can't disagree with that annoyingly, which is, I fucking hate it when I have to say that to you on the podcast. I really, really do. It's rather irritating, but I can't disagree with that.
Happening more often, isn't it?
Sadly, it is happening more often. So we don't have to go into that, though, do we?
Mm-hmm. We can as we go on, you know, when you say it again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. And the scream mask, Steve, iconic.
Absolutely iconic, but not scary now. It's I think the whole Scary Movie franchise kind of took the fear out of that one for me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you look at it more and you're kind of so familiar with it. And I think when you're so familiar with something, it takes the chill. But actually, it's weird. I've just kind of contradicted myself because saying that, I don't like, and I love when we did the reviews. And I think me and Kel did the last three films, the Halloween. Mm-hmm. Michael Myers mask still fucking freaks me out. And I'm still so familiar with that. But I think that goes back to my roots of watching it when I was a youngster. And it terrified me when I actually watched the original Jamie Lee Curtis one. I hated it. But you are right, Steve. You're so used to it. It's kind of part of your upbringing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very much one of the most easily accessible masks every Halloween. So it's just, yeah, it's more of it. You kind of associate it now with the franchise as opposed to the villain. So it's almost like how Chelsea have their crest, Scream has the mask. So it's more associates, not actually anything that makes you scared anymore.
No, or Spurs have their cock, don't they?
Spurs do have their cock, yes. It is a very little cock, but they have it.
Size is not everything. And the one I've sent you is the Chrome Skull, the killer, was a really fucked up film in Late Arrest. That one, for me, is evil as fuck. It looks like the mask. As soon as it's chrome, it looks like Terminator, like the T-1000, doesn't it, when it's stripped of his skin?
Yeah. But then again, it looks a bit cheap.
I'd be scared. We would come out. I really don't like stuff like that. I don't like skeletons at all. They're just not very nice. But what do you think of that one, Kel? If anyone's listening to this, if you Googled Chrome Skull Late Arrest, it's just not a very nice mask. I don't like it.
No, I can't say I would want them to approach me if I was stood in a dark alley and they walked past. I'd just want them to keep going. But yeah, I don't like that one.
No, completely agree. And the very final one, it's a kind of a bland mask, but I think it's more what it stands for, is Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Obviously, it's made of people's skin, and it's really fucked up. And at the time when it came out, I think it's a Tobe Hooper film, it's really fucked up and iconic. And for me, just for what that stands for back in the day, that's a fucked up mask. That really, really is. I mean, Steve, that's something that surely you'd remember.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we did one of these films maybe a few months back, and it still really creeps me out. I think it's because it is someone's real face, but all the emotion's gone, all the expression's gone. It's just, yeah, it's weird. It's creepy.
We did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one that Netflix did, didn't they?
That was yeah.
Yeah, that was that was not a bad film. There were some really good kills in there. Were you on that one, Kel?
No, I don't think so. I don't remember that one.
That's worth watching just for shits and gigs. But another one is what I showed you, and you should remember this, Kelly. It's Terrifier. It's Art the Clown. That really horrible white face with those bloody teeth, and he wears that little hat. It's not a mask. He just paints his face white. And that one is fucking terrible. There's three films, and to be fair, the films are mildly entertaining. They're just really, really violent.
Yes.
But that one...
One would give me fucking nightmares. I hate clowns.
Yeah.
Fucking hate clowns. They are scary. I don't understand why people think they are fun. They're not funny. They're just wholly inappropriate. Just fuck off. Get away from me.
Yeah. This one's worse than Stephen King's It Clown for me when you see it. Yep. It's terrible. Have you seen this, Steve? Are you familiar with art?
No, I've not actually.
If you can get hold of the films, any of them, it doesn't really make a difference. They're really violent and they've got a real dark humour to them. It's just, yeah, you can watch it without really thinking and just enjoy some really, really savage deaths. But yeah, definitely, definitely recommend it. And just before we get into some of the facts, and this was quite funny that one of the ones I read, this was when they came in, and I love it when I go to the cinema. We all go quite a lot. Well, Kelly, there is a thing called a cinema where you go and you watch films, sit down with other people. But you go, Steve, to the cinema just as much as me, really, don't you?
Yeah, I haven't gone as much as I used to. I think that's just because of the films that have been released. But yeah, I do love a trip to the cinema.
And when you get the Blumhouse, it's always a creepy kind of short video you get to introduce you to, like the Blumhouse Productions, don't you?
Yeah, it's like a little movie in itself.
Yeah, this was the first time they redid the new one. Executive producer Jason Blum from Blumhouse sent Derrickson a black phone and a display case after reading the script, giving them the green light. Derrickson moved into a new house in 2021, and Blum had secretly mounted on the wall in his house in the basement a black phone. And Derrickson said, I was just sitting in the living room when I heard a phone ring in the basement. And I was like, oh my God, what was that be? And I went down, discovered the black phone, which was sitting in the basement in a cradle ringing. And he said it freaked him the fuck out. And it was a joke played by Jason Blum. That's an amazing joke, isn't it?
I mean, it would scare the shit out of me. So it would take me a while to see the funny side of it. But it's, yeah, it's good.
I'd be fucking terrified. But that would just be, I'd love to do something like that. It just cracked me up. But Scott Derrickson's brought memories from his own childhood, including Ted Bundy's killing murderous trip through Colorado. And he said his girl, the girl next door, that she was murdered. And he also recently spoke to, just by chance, one of the members of the Manson family murderers. So he brought lots of memories back from there. And the grabber used the black balloons to, I really thought I was going to say that badly, black balloons, to abduct his victims. This is reminiscent of the painting the daughter does in the bedroom of Sinister in 2012, which features a character holding a black balloon. So it's a kind of a nod to Derrickson's own film. And as I said earlier, one of the writers was Joe Hill, Stephen King's son. And I think there are references, and I've just made this up, I haven't read it anywhere else, to The Shining in this film. Have you guys, sorry, Steve, have you seen The Shining?
I actually have never watched The Shining.
Oh, my
There you go. It
Lord.
Bites you in the arse.
No, it doesn't bite me in the arse. It's just out of the two, if I was a betting man, I would have put money on Steve actually doing it.
There you go.
Yeah, it shows how wrong I am. I get that. But this film, I love the setting of this film. It's obviously set in the 70s. The filter and the grain they use, you really do get a 70s vibe, don't you, from this?
Wasn't alive, couldn't tell you what a 70s vibe is, mate.
But it looks old, doesn't it?
It does look, I do like it, yeah. It feels like it's got a slight grain to it, you're right.
It's like Stranger Things, isn't it? Everything's kind of set, and like the clothes, and they've got everything spot on, don't they?
If that's what you were wearing in the 70s, mate, then yes.
In the 70s, I was wearing like $6 Million Man t-shirts, Muppet Show, Popeye, stuff like that. That's
what,
embarrassing.
What kind of hair did you have?
Pardon?
What kind of hair did you have?
What kind of hair? I look like a Lego man that with interchangeable hair, and my head, for some reason, aged quicker than the rest of my body and was a lot bigger. I was like actually, when you get a four-year-old who draws a picture of a person when it's just a massive head with legs and arms coming out of it, that's pretty much what I was like.
In a Million Dollar Man t-shirt.
Yes. Yeah. I was a real catch at nursery, honestly. I could be mopped up.
A great picture.
A catch at nursery.
That's probably the wrong thing to say about a grabber, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, that's not the right film.
But yeah, I was a real freak. But like an ugly duckling, I like to think I turned into a swan.
As long as you think that, that's all that matters.
Do you know, I didn't expect backup from you. I really, really didn't.
Oh, I don't want to disappoint. So there you go.
Thanks so much. And fuck you as well. But this film starts with a baseball match. And we've got Finney there. And we're introduced to our first victim. And I kind of didn't know where it was going to go, really. Because I didn't know if it was going to be this other kid. You've got Bruce, who I don't really know the rules of baseball. But he misses the ball twice. And he's nearly going to get struck out. But he hits the ball for a home run. And I would have thought there was kind of some animosity between Finney and from Bruce. But there isn't. And afterwards, he walks up to him, and it's a line that you really, really need to remember. He says to him, "Your arm is mint. You almost had me." And that's massive foreshadow. If you're paying attention, you really benefit later on. But it's a really good introduction. And the kids in this, both of you must agree, even you, Kelly, who's so fucking picky about everything. They're amazing actors, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. It is very well done, and they put quite a lot of emotion and everything into it. Yeah, it's really good.
And I think what's scary about this, like, obviously I am a lot older than you guys, but set in the 70s, you didn't have CCTV, and there wasn't kind of deep into like forensics investigation. There wasn't mobile phones. If you went round to a friend's house, you physically went round there yourself and knocked on the door to see if they were coming out to play. You could have travelled miles to do that. And it's a real concern when you had people like Ted Bundy and Gacy and out there killing people. And it must have been so easy for serial killers, because you don't really get high profile serial killer cases in this day, to go around and snatch kids and kill them. And it's something that when you see Bruce after the baseball match cycling down the road on his own, I got a real sense of his vulnerability, knowing that if he was taken, as I said, no CCTV, no Ring doorbells, there's no witnesses. You're fucked, aren't you?
Yeah, massively. You don't realise how important it actually is in this day and age. But back then, I think the kind of the way that he's riding his bike and he's going past people, and it just gets lesser and lesser until it is just him and obviously the grabber.
And it's, do you think it's good that the grabber in his van just turns up in front of him and you see him? You don't actually physically see Bruce get grabbed. Later on in the film, you know what happens. But did you think that was a good thing to start with? Like in Jaws, when they don't show the whole shark, you just get a sense of what's actually happened?
Yeah, I don't think they needed to. In these kind of films, definitely horror films, I usually find the less you see, the scarier it becomes and the more unnerving, because you try and fill in the blanks, don't you? So, yeah, I think if you played all the cards straight away, you'd be like, okay, he's just like some child snatcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang kind of style. So, yeah, I think they did it the right way.
Kels, what about yourself?
And it burns me to say, but I have to agree with Steve. It's much better if you fill in the gaps yourself, because it adds more suspense to it. So I think, yeah, they played it well.
Have you ever watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Well, I have, yes.
Okay, just wondering, because it's quite an iconic. I think there's similarities with that in this film.
The mask and the face is very fucking freaky. The child catcher scared the living shit out of me when I was little. Yeah. I ran and hid in my nan's larder.
In your what?
In my nan's larder.
That's a car, isn't it?
Like a food store.
All right.
So a cupboard.
No.
Where were you brought up? To be hiding in an actual larder. Did you go to Narnia as well in a massive wardrobe?
That would be quite cool. Yeah, if I could have done that, I would have. But I didn't find the wardrobe, so I wasn't lucky enough.
I would have had to hide in my fucking nan's biscuit tin.
You wouldn't have got your head in the biscuit tin.
I thought you're definitely right. I'd have ended up A&E of one of those kids with a fucking saucepan on his head. I could have done with knowing your nan to hide in her larder.
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear.
But also you do miss this, and you only watch it on the second time round, once you kind of have the critical eye, and when they show the missing person pictures, when you see Griffin, who isn't really part of it, and it is creepy, because again, back in the day, like in this country you didn't really have it, but in America you see it, all the posters around on like the milk cartons of a missing kid. And it's good to get kind of the word out and people looking and thinking about it. But it's quite horrific that you're having breakfast in the morning and you've got a milk carton on the table in front of your kids. And chances are there's a picture of someone who's been like murdered in such a brutal way and is missing. It's a fucking weird thing to do in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, but I suppose it was the only way really to thrust in people's face.
Faces. That's the thing, because we never had like the internet, obviously, so you'd like put stuff like that around everywhere for people to see, and it's great. And I want to talk about the dynamics of the family home for Gwenny and Finny and their dad Terence. It's portrayed really well. You do learn that their mother, we don't really know much about it. We are missing backstories in this film, which is something that I kind of probably we'll talk about later on when we're kind of scoring it. But there's loads of domestic abuse, and it appears to mainly lay at the poor foot of Gwenny when she's beaten by her dad. And her mother has had this ability to see like premonitions and kind of connect with the dead. And she kind of, I don't know whether she had a mental breakdown and killed herself, but this is why the dad is so against Gwenny when she has her visions, isn't it? And it's so realistic, isn't it, Kels, the way it's portrayed and the level of violence towards Gwenny.
Yeah, that scene, I think, like you said at the start, it was done very well. It's very realistic. And you kind of, you really felt for her and him, because he obviously wanted to help her, but just was kind of frozen to the spot, and it just, you could see that that is how it would happen in reality, and they did it, all three of them did it really well.
Yeah, it must have, and it was really difficult. The scene we'll talk about later on, but when he actually does beat Gwen, that the critics asked them to remove that because it was so realistic, but he wanted to leave it in because he believed it was kind of so impactive, and to a certain degree in the 70s it wasn't an offence to beat your child, so he was, in that day, he wasn't committing a crime. But we're soon introduced to a character who I do like, and I'm gutted when he dies, is Robin, played by Miguel Mora. And he could be a bully of his own, and there's no real backstory for him, but you see him and everyone gathers around, and it's just like you had at school when there was a fight, and everyone stood around shouting out, fight, fight, fight. And this Robin beats the fuck out of this bully, doesn't he? And this, everyone loves a bully getting a fucking smacking. And this is quality, isn't it?
Depends what you mean by quality. Yes, I suppose it's nice that he gets a shooing, but I think he takes it a little bit too far.
But he says why he does it. He wants to put a show on for everyone. If there's no blood, there's no impact.
Hey, why'd you fight Moose?
He was just shit-talking. Pretty sure he'd back down.
Nope.
I was so surprised when he swung, to be honest.
I mean, did you have to? It looked like you really hurt him.
I was just gonna knock his ass down, wail on him a bit, but that wouldn't draw no blood. In a situation like that, the more blood, the better. For the crowd, you know? Makes a stronger point.
I think it's fucking great. I mean, Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, I understand his motives, to be honest. He makes it quite clear that he's not just going around beating people up for the sake of it. So, yeah, I think it's a good fight. Proper good fight. And he doesn't just finish it when he's on the floor. He lets him know that there's more. And he pummels his face. And yeah, proper fight. Proper how it used to be. Good old, that's how you got shit sorted out at school.
It was, wasn't it? You had a fight. You knew where you stood. You moved on. There wasn't any of this fucking grassing up stuff. It just wasn't the way it was. But you learn about Finny. It's completely kind of polar opposite in a way to Gwen, who's really feisty. And she's a couple of years younger than him. But I like the fact, even though she has her dreams and she has these visions which do come true and she can connect to the dead, that she's not overly powerful. She's not super intellectual. She's just like well up for sticking up for her brother and doesn't put up with any nonsense. And it's kind of highlighted early on when Finny won't even say the grabber, because he's frightened to say the name, but Gwen does. And again, it's the dynamics between these two as brother and sister, Kels, which is so, for me, believable. The chemistry there is just so good.
It is, but, and I guess that's because they're a force against their dad, aren't they? So they're kind of showing their connection to everything. And she obviously picks up on his weaknesses, if you like. So she's got the balls, even though you wouldn't think it to look at her. So it sort of comes as a surprise to everyone. So they back off a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. And I love the bathroom scene where the bullies chase Finney into the bathroom and then Robin comes in and he just swaggers in there with so much confidence. And he's three of them. He could potentially be outnumbered. And he's not really big, but he knows karate. He's well kind of Ralph Macchio in his back kicks. And he owns these three bullies, doesn't he, Steve? He just tells them when to stop, when to go, who to bully, who not to. I mean, he owns them. I love it.
Dipshits, move. Hey, Finn. What's happening?
You know, just keeping on, keeping on, I guess.
Uh-huh. Moose got some damn sharp teeth. Knuckles bled all first period. Wait. Fuck with Finn again. I fuck with you. You can leave now.
It just shows the authority and the power he has, and his actions have given him that power. So it all lines up. It all makes sense why he does what he does, because otherwise, if he just had a little fight, they'd probably be more inclined to give it back. But because he's actually fucking wrecked some other kid, he can now go around saying, right, you listen to me. This is the rules of the land.
Yeah. And that's why he kind of carried on beating and beating and beating, because other kids would have that switch in their mind to stop where he doesn't. But from there, this first kind of solo scene to a certain degree from Gwen, when the police officers turn up and want to speak to her about her dreams and about the names that have been mentioned of the kids missing, and you had a dream about him, and she fucking lays into these police officers, doesn't she, with her language. She's so feisty, she doesn't give a shit, does she?
No, but rightfully so. They're kind of asking her all these weird questions. She's like, what, so you're saying I must know about you? You're saying I'm the grabber? And she's got a fucking attitude behind her, but I really think this is when the acting starts to show, like, how good the kids really are in this.
Yeah, I completely agree. And from that scene, which is really good when she's berating the police officers, it steps up another level the next day where the police have gone to Terrence's work and he's beating her in the kitchen. And it's done really well because you see him with the belt just hitting her, but you don't really see the physical contact from him. And the majority of it is him shouting. But it's done so well with the crying. A lot of this was just ad-lib. And because her performance was so powerful, it then had an effect when I looked at the interviews of both Madeleine McCraw, but Gwen and Finney being interviewed. They said they fed off each other's emotions, that he was crying after looking at her and back and forth. I mean, they're so good. They're really powerful scene. And to see a child being beaten like that, Kels, it's brutal, isn't it?
You stay out of this!
Gwenny. They came to my work. Why did the police come to my work?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
You need to tell me what you know about this investigation.
Nothing.
Tell me what... What?
Nothing.
Huh?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing. Hit me again and I'm dropping it.
You drop that and I will beat your ass to watch this all.
Yeah, brutal is a good word for it. It is horrific. And you really do feel, like I say, you do feel for them. You know, you can almost imagine her actually being hit. Like, you don't see it, but you can imagine it is actually happening. And the way she just responds and he feeds off of that, I think is brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. And then the next scene, which is weird, is when you see Robin, he gets obviously taken by the grabber. It's the way it's done. It's almost as if he's there to meet the grabber. It looks like an empty parking lot that he just walks up, and then obviously it kind of blackens out, and then you hear that he's been taken. It's a weird way of doing it. Again, they don't give a lot away, but they don't explain how he was grabbed either, Steve. And for me, I'd have liked to have seen a bit more because Robin puts up a fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite reminiscent of Bruce getting grabbed, so maybe this was their chance to give not everything else, but yeah, like you said, a bit more, so we can see if Robin has got that fight in him when it comes to an adult. So a little bit more would have been a good thing, but again, maybe it's still trying to keep some secrecy as to his methods and whatnot.
Yeah, and again, I think it's really sad when they obviously ring Terrence up and say about the kid being missing, and he speaks to Gwen and Finn. And he says, do you know the kid? And Finn is kind of naively, innocently talking about he's still my best friend, whereas Gwen's talking in past tense that he was a good guy because she knows he's dead. And I think it sums up the innocence and fear still with Finn that there is someone out there and he's fucking terrified. But why aren't the police doing more? This is clearly, this is what, the third, you've had the Paperboy, you've had Griffin, Bruce, Robin. This is like the fourth kid who's been taken from what we know. But there's no curfew, is there? There's no lockdown at all. It's a weird fucking thing. The police aren't doing anything, are they?
No, they're nowhere to be seen. I mean, they're interviewing a little girl, for fuck's sake. That's literally the best lead they've got. They've got nothing else. Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're doing much around town. And like you said, there's a lot of kids going missing, but it doesn't seem to be any action.
No, and they still go around the house and they still talk to her about her dreams and what did she see. And it's, yeah, they're putting all of their eggs into one basket of Gwen, who I think is about 9 years old, of getting her to crack it. And I like the fact, and it's so realistic and it's brutal again, girls, that the next day, because poor Robin's been killed, he was the only thing stopping Finn getting a fucking shoeing from these three bullies. And they give him a massive fucking shoeing again, don't they?
Do, and I think that is so cruel because, again, she comes out to save him and they lay into her, for fuck's sake. It's really harsh. It is, again, it's really brutal, I think. And you do see blood on this bit as well. You see quite a lot of blood where she's, I think, smacked around the face with a rock.
Yeah, it's full on, isn't it? And it is, because he sits there in absolute shock, leaning against the fence, and she's running up with tirades of abuse. And then it's almost as if, like, what the fuck's happened? And there is loads of claret dripping down. And then she gets a fucking shoo-in. And then it's weird the fact that she then pulls herself out of the fight and because she's had enough. And they both, her and one of the other bullies, Steve, sit and watch Finn get a shoo-in, don't they?
Yeah, it's like time out, right? We're out of this one. So let's just see what unfolds. But I suppose I like this about the film because they're not afraid to do, like, film these scenes. Cause,
no.
I mean, who wants to see a little girl get kicked in the face? Not many people. And it's quite a brave thing to put on a big screen and be like, they're going to love this. Mm. So I appreciate this scene from that point of view. But yeah, seeing them both kind of sat up against the fence with equally injured, and just watching Finny get the rest of it, I thought, strangely comical in a way.
Yeah, it was. It's almost like I gave it a go. I got one of them and fuck it, I'll just sit the rest out. And what did you think, Kels? And talk us through the scene when Finny finally gets taken. Because there's some mannerisms about the grabber that you thought were a bit strange. Possibly kind of the way he's inclined. But what did you think about the whole scene of him, Finn getting taken?
It's very good. You could see what was going to happen, because obviously the black van and everything, and it's the most you see of his face, I think. But he's got he's very demonstrative with his hands, and he's very effeminate with his hands, and he only takes little boys. He doesn't take little girls. So I reckon he might be gay or closet gay or something like that, and that's why he's doing it this way.
And it's ballsy to take the way he did it. And it's a classic way what worked, like your aunt is ill, your mum and dad are ill, here's some puppies, magic. It's a real way to get into the children. And it's awful. The way he grabs Finn and drags him into that van, Steve, it is absolutely terrifying because this happened, like, in most states back in the 70s and 80s, didn't it?
I am a part-time magician. Would you like to see a magic trick?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Are those black balloons in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is obviously a very popular method back in the day. And unfortunately, because of that, it's become a bit of a joke nowadays. Everyone says, oh, look, there's a van with puppies written on the side or free candy, or in my case, pickled onions. But it's, it's, yeah, I can imagine it's quite a fear. Like, I remember watching this film at the cinema and then coming out and making jokes about, oh, that van looks like the grabber's van, this van looks like the grabber's van.
Mm.
And it's still very much a fear for, I imagine, a lot of people who have to like walk home from school and stuff.
Yeah, it's quite terrifying. And when he does get Finn, he gets him into his, like, the basement of his house, and he says, I would have snapped your neck. And he's got the mask on without the mouth, so you don't know what he looks like. You can't see Ethan Hawke's face. And he's cut on the arm by this rocket, which is a torch as well, which Finn has. And I couldn't kind of work out what is wrong with the grabber, because he talks about that he's like been down there as well. It's soundproof. He knows that. And like, he won't snap his neck. He won't let anyone hurt him, and nothing's going to happen to him while he's down there. And it's almost as if he's kind of schizophrenic, like a sociopath. I would have thought whilst he's got the mask off, he might be really nice. When he's got the mask on, he might be really evil. But there doesn't seem to be like a pattern to the way he works, does there?
I suppose you're right. I mean, I imagine him getting the kids, obviously we only see it happen to Philly, getting the kids is the same. But yeah, how he treats them seems to be inconsistent based on the stories we've heard the stories we hear later on in the film. Again, maybe what Kel was saying, she's probably spot on with having those kind of, maybe a closet gay, because he seems to want to care for Finny in a way with the things he says, which is very, very strange. Like, I don't really get what his deal is.
No, I don't. And he is very caring by nature, with like wanting to feed him and look after him, again, promising that nothing will happen. But again, when he stands at the door, he's really weird. He's like, oh, everything's all fucked up, and I think the phone's ringing upstairs, I'll bring you food down. And he's laughing, and he's being really childlike in his mannerisms, isn't he? So I would have liked to have known a bit of, even when after he was killed, or they identify who it is, as to a background to the grabber. Would you have, do you think that's needed, or are you quite happy never knowing?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you're aware, but there's a second one coming out next year.
I did see, but I didn't know if it's in production or there's a date.
Yeah. So I think it's July next year. I think there is a date. And I think Ethan Hawke is due to return, which is obviously weird. So I don't know if that maybe will be like they use it for to explore his story afterwards, or he comes back as like a ghost or something.
Or a prequel, possibly.
Yeah. I would like to know more, actually. I would like to know why he is the way he is. And maybe there's got something triggers this behavior in people. So I would like to know why, how, when, who, all of that. That's something I feel this film lacked.
Yeah, because he says, Kels, that when they talk about the phone, that it went off while I was right next to it and I picked it up and without thinking, and there was no one there, which kind of gave the impression that he may have been locked down here as well. Did you get that?
Yeah, I think it's a process that he's potentially been through for whatever reason. But again, that could be in this time as well. It could have been that he was gay and someone's locked him down there because he's gay. It could all link into that. I don't know, because it was all frowned upon in those times. So it could be linked to that, but I think it's some kind of trauma that he's been through that he is now projecting onto other people to try and, I don't know, maybe get that connection or get some kind of affection from someone. And I think that's why he tries to care for him.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it'd be really interesting to see, like, now, just thinking about it and talking about it, as to if they do a prequel, what will happen, and if we're right in our assumptions that he possibly was abused by his dad or locked down here by the killer, and he ended up killing the killer and became kind of took over what he was doing. It'll be good to see that, and I'd like to see that. And again, he's got the masks, and he keeps coming in, playing with him, not physically, thankfully, but mind games with Finn. And the phone goes first of all, and it freaked me the fuck out. And again, because it's just Finn in this room, the majority of the time with the phone going, his acting is so good. If you look at the making of this on YouTube, where you've got all the markings on the floor as to where he needs to position himself, and his directions being shouted out by Scott Derrickson, is so good. And I think the first phone call is from the paperboy, isn't it?
No.
Well, who's the first phone call from?
From Brucey, isn't it?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, Brucey boy. That's when he obviously drops the line you were referring to earlier.
Who is this?
I don't remember my name.
Why not?
It's the first thing you lose.
First thing you lose when?
You know when.
How do you know my name?
We met once. Your arm is mint. You almost had me.
That's right. He says your arm is mint, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, because he was the first. Well, he makes reference to basically losing his identity, doesn't he? So it's Finny that's like, you're Bruce. And he's like, yeah, yeah. Saying that when you die, one of the first things you forget is your name.
Do you think the longer you're in there, the more you forget about your kind of own identity? Because Robin can pretty much remember most things, can't he?
Yeah, I think that's what they're alluding to. Maybe the whole passing over and becoming a memory or this, that and the other. So, yeah, probably. It's not really super explained, but I suppose it doesn't need to be.
No, and he tells him to dig a hole, rip the lino up and dig a hole, which he does. And you kind of don't really know why, but it does become apparent later on in the whole setup as to why he's doing this. I was a bit, unless he's got a really, really good toilet in the basement, the amount of mud he digs up and flushes down the toilet. I mean, I wish I had a flushing system on the toilet like that, Kels.
Do you produce that much shit then? Why would you need a toilet that flushes that much?
I've got two children who eat a lot of fibre. Let's just say that.
Oh, that's disgusting. I don't really need to answer that. That's grim.
I do like the next day when the grabber comes in with the tray of food and he puts it on the floor. He goes, what have you done to it? He's like, I don't need to do anything. I've got you. Like, why would I drug it? You can't get anywhere. And saying that with that smiley mask is very, very good. And it's the first mind game. He leaves the door open. And it's a really sinister trick that he's got, Steve, isn't it? It's no accident, we learn.
No, because the phone goes again, and that's when it is Paperboy, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Who clearly, in his turn in the basement, made the mistake of going up there and getting absolutely pelted. So, yeah, he's like, don't go up there. It's a trap. He's waiting with a belt. And then it does cut to him really quite sinister, but almost homoerotic in a way, because I didn't realise he's Ethan Hawke's in good shape.
They don't really explain it at all, but I definitely think, yes, there is something to do with that going on, and that's that part of the frustration, part of the pent-up anger and potential previous trauma and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And again, the flashbacks, I love them from Gwen when she's in the school nurse's room. And she has the dream of the paper boy, of the way he's been kidnapped. And she sees like the house and he's standing outside with the black balloons. The vision of him doing that is really fucking freaky. And the only being picky, because we watched these films under a critical eye. When the paper boy tells him about the cord, the wire that's in the wall and the grates on the wall and to pull it off where the window is. And it is all soundproof. There is no way he would be able to feed that wire up through the window. It's either got to be really stiff to go upwards, and then all of a sudden, goes back to Steve, goes floppy, and then goes back on him again. That's, I mean, it's a very, very minor thing, but it just never would happen, would it?
I don't think it's that minor, though, because it's quite a big plot driver in a way, because it's obviously a suggested escape plan. And it just, it's like he's got charming a snake or something, the way it wriggles up and then flops and loops and comes back round. I think it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, it was absolutely bonkers.
But there's a couple of bits like that irritate me.
Go for it.
So going back to when Finney's taken, he obviously cuts him with his rocket ship thing, the torch thing, but then he passes out. So if he had that rocket ship in his hand and he's passed out, he would have dropped it.
Yeah, maybe he just held onto it with his hand. Maybe it was just locked in there.
Well, clearly he did that. But you wouldn't. If he passed out, you just wouldn't. It would knuckle. Well,
I thought that the grabber gave it to him. I have to say.
No, because he had, what, the torch thing?
Yeah.
No, he had that right at the very beginning. Oh, he had that fascination with the...
I thought he dropped it and he gave it to him. I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe I am wrong. I
remember that. Okay, maybe if he did that, then okay, fair enough. But I missed that bit clearly.
You'll probably tell me that I'm wrong later on, but I just thought that. I did like the scene when Terrence finally sits Gwen down and he goes through what happened to the mum. And it's a kind of a bonding scene to a certain degree, but you can never forgive the amount of abuse that he's given her. But it's finally the first time we get a bit of background story.
Your mother, she was a special soul and she was smart. Just like you. But sweetheart, she was also touched. She saw things and she heard things and she just became so convinced that her dreams meant something and eventually they told her to do things, terrible things. And so she took her own life.
And that's when I think, and for those who have seen it listening to this, when you've got Hanrahan, who's the black caretaker, he sits down, little kid in The Shining, and talks about, like, I've got this gift, or my mum had this gift, and I can talk to people without talking to people. And they called it the shine, and he's got the shining. And to a certain degree, she has as well, because she's got that ability to communicate to other people without talking. And I just thought that that was a massive nod, especially coming and being written by Joe Hill, the son of Stephen King, who wrote the book The Shining. But obviously to you guys, that won't mean anything because you haven't seen the film, have you?
No. Sorry.
That's okay. If you watch the film, it's well worth watching. It's iconic.
Can I ask a question, though? And hopefully you two will be able to shine some light on this. Obviously, nice. Gwen speaks to... Well, she does prayers, doesn't she, a lot? She speaks to God
and slags him off, yeah.
Yeah. So is this like a Christian-based power or is this like a medium-based power?
Well, when she talks to people.
Well, yeah, when she has her visions and stuff. Like, is it the Lord giving her visions or is she like psychic?
I think it's The Shining. I think that's what it is. The Shining gives you the ability to for certain people to see other people and to communicate with them from the other side. And that's what it is in the film. You really need to watch Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, because it's just fucking amazing film.
What's the name of that film again? I don't think you mentioned it.
I will at the end of the podcast. Just remind me. But it's so, so good. And I think that's what it is. But I love the bit when they introduce, and he's one of those actors you think, I know his face. Can't remember what I've seen him in, but I've seen it fuck loads of times. James Ranson, who plays Max, who we learn later on is the brother of the grabber. And he's like his own private detective agency in his room where he's trying to work out who's doing what, where the kids are, where they're being stored, and where they're buried. He's spot on. Because it's his own brother doing it, but he comes across as a joke. And when you first watch this, you think, is he involved, Kel? You know, is he something to do with it?
No, I didn't think he was something to do with it in as much as he didn't know anything about it. But I knew by what he was saying that it would be linked to him, or he would have a link to the grabber in some way. But I never thought that he knew anything about it. I genuinely thought he was some crackpot.
So how do you think he would come into it then? Because I thought that he would be part of it further down the line. I honestly did.
I don't know. I don't know how I thought it, but when he was given the placement saying he's got to have a local place for them to be kept and he's got to have a vehicle, he's got to do this, he's got to do that, it was quite obvious that because he was, like you say, absolutely spot on, and it was all within the area that he obviously lives in, because that comes into it, you knew it was so close to home. But I just never thought he was intelligent enough to know about it, because he's the sort of person, if you tell a secret, the whole world knows about it. So I didn't think he would have the knowledge or have any information on it, because he just wouldn't be able to keep it to himself. He's just a little bit simple.
Yeah, I feel really rude now. Now you just said he's a little bit simple. Steve, what's your thoughts?
on Max?
Yeah.
I think Max needs to lay off the coke, especially when he has detectives at the door.
Yeah, I think that...
Oh, he is
that explains
so...
explains his level of enthusiasm, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's just fucking wired, and it's... Yeah, there's... yeah, I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to offend anyone, so... But, yeah.
No worries, that's fine. Then you can talk about the next scene, when the grabber comes downstairs with food, and he says to Finn... He wants to know his name, and Finn lies about his name. And he says, I would have let you go. And he's really, he seems kind of genuinely disappointed. Is he toying with him? Why is he doing this? It's an interesting scene, isn't it?
It's just more games, isn't it? Like I am of the opinion that the grabber does genuinely pick the people he grabs. I don't think anything is an accident. I don't think he's an opportunist. I think he lines up. He must know more about Finny, because he's this kind of, all the kids he's taken, they're not like the super popular kids, apart from maybe Bruce. They all seem to be more, in a way, independent and loners, so it must make it easy for him. So I think he knows, and he's then challenged him again. Finny's told a porcupine, and yeah, so well, you failed the next challenge, so get fucked.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I'd like to know how he picks his victims, because, yeah, you got Bruce, as you said, who's really popular. Griffin, who's a fucking big guy. I'd love to have seen him try and take Griffin down, because he was a fucking a big old oak, that kid. But they don't really explain how it works. So the next time the phone rings, it's one of the coasts, one of the kids, I can't remember which one it is, who tells him his bike's stolen and his bike lock is being used to hold the rear door in. And again, you get that tension, because the grabber is in the kitchen again. He's not topless, thankfully, but he's waiting for Finn to come up the stairs so he can belt him. And Finn actually does go up the stairs, and you've got that tension of, is he going to make it? Is he going to end up running down the stairs? And he escapes the house, and he gets caught disappointingly really easy, doesn't he?
Yeah, this scene pissed me off, to be honest, like really pissed me off. So, obviously, Finny bolt in. It's kind of nighttime. The grabber grabs him. That's what the grabber does. Goes to the floor, and Finny's obviously, like, screamed for help or something. So, a couple of lights come on. If you think you've heard a scream of a child at night and there's multiple kids that have gone missing in your neighbourhood, mm-hmm. You're not just going to have a look outside, are you? You're going to get out of your house and you're going to think, fuck, I'm going to call the police.
Yeah,
but no, the lights just go back off. No one comes out. And yeah, I do like what the grabber says. He's going to gut him like a pig if he makes a sound.
Yeah, proper fucking hardcore what he says, isn't it?
Yeah, no shit's given.
No, you'd be terrified. And again, what's hardcore is the next day when Gwen wakes up and has a go at God for not sending any more dreams. She's brilliant. She fucking cracks me up.
She's... The issue with her as an actor is, if she's normally like child actors that are that good just stay known as child actors and never go anywhere, but she could be a brilliant actress moving forward.
So the next time the phone rings, it's Vance Hopper, the kid who we see later on, a bit of a backstory, and he's a fucking big old lump. And you get the vision, you learn the vision is by Gwen, of him playing pinball.
You fucked with my game!
Oh,
Come here, bitch!
Some poor kid nudges the pinball machine, and you think he's going to have the shit beaten out of him, which he ends up doing it, but he pulls a fucking knife, doesn't he? And it's Vance Hopper who takes on two and beats the shit out of him, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then he, in this, is this when he carves the house number into the kid's arm as well? So that's fucking, I mean, I know this is obviously a vision of sorts, but that's fucking illegal, very illegal, that.
It's sick, isn't it? It really, really is sick. And it's great, Kells, when he's in the back of the police car being carted off, and you've got Gwen in the back there, and you over the radio, you've got the messages that he's telling Finney down the phone.
Do you even know who you are?
What the shit kind of question is that? Do you even know who you are?
I'm Finney Blake.
Hell, nice to fucking meet you, Finney Blake. Right here. This is it.
This is what?
The horrifying nightmare end of your pathetic little wife.
Holy shit. You're Vance Hopper. I remember you.
It's really, really creepy. But you don't see him getting snatched, which is weird, because I really wanted to see him get snatched. But you do see the door number of the house. So finally, we've got something to go on.
Yeah, you get the link. I think they could, as it goes on, they could show you a bit more of the snatches that happen, just to see how different ones go down, because it would be interesting to see if it does exactly the same thing every time. I think it kind of, that would benefit from that.
Yeah, and so he gives a real pointless way to escape of breaking the wall down and climbing into the fridge and then climbing out again of the other side of the fridge freezer. But you can't, once you're in the fridge, you can't open the door just by suction alone, can you? So it's never going to work, that fucking effort of escaping, is it?
I've never been inside a fridge trying to get out, so I wouldn't know.
If she goes inside a larder.
Oh, yeah, sorry, you're inside the larder, aren't you? Jesus. With all the other condiments and everything. But in the 80s, there was a big thing, because we were all idiots in the 80s when we were younger, of going down like scrap yards and hiding in fridges and stuff. And when you're in the fridge, it wouldn't open because of the way it works. It's like a suction power. You can open it from the outside. And people were being suffocated in there. So this really would never work. It's going to be locked from the outside, which it is. And he doesn't escape. And it's one of the worst efforts. I think the ghost should be embarrassed. Vance gave him fuck all help. Finally, the next person, the very last person he meets, is Robin. And Robin remembers who he is. There's still that bond there. And he still wants to look after you. And I love what Robin says to him.
Today is the day you stop taking shit from anybody.
Not a fighter like you, Robin. You couldn't even take him.
You've always been a fighter, Finn. That's what we have in common. While we were friends, you were always afraid to throw a punch, but you always knew how to take one. And you always caught back up. Every time.
I'm not strong enough.
You have to be. You're getting out of here. If you can't do it for you, do it for me.
What does it matter?
Because I don't want to die for nothing. I want to at least have died for a friend.
If I could have a ghost, I'd want it to be like Robin, because Robin's fucking double hard, even as a ghost, isn't he? Inspirational.
You can just have friends that are inspirational.
I could, but that's a massive ask, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. That's not going to happen.
Exactly. I'd just be setting myself up to be massively let down. He does tell him to fight him. He tells him to pack the phone out with mud, both ends, use it as a weapon. Because again, he's got his right arm, which is a massive weapon when he can throw the ball that hard that he can smash the grabber in the face. And it's all set up for a big showdown. And this is your moment, Kel. This is when we see Gwen cycling down the road with that wax yellow jacket on. This is your moment to shine. The Shining.
It's not The Shining, is it? But that was just the reference I saw. I had no idea that there was any connection to it. It just reminded me of it.
Mind you, what? It's be more. Can you explain that more descriptive?
Yeah, you need that to is such a dad joke. That is such a dad joke.
Stu, I really liked it, so well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You are easily pleased, though, so that's not saying much.
Oh, yeah. And she's cycling down the road, and she meets all of the dead people lining up in the road outside the bad house, and she falls off her bike, and it's a really good moment, because they're all fucking really creepy, and she calls our useless detectives. And for a moment, this is when Max, the brother of the grabbers, chance to shine. He looks at the map in front of him and suddenly works out, do you know what? I'm sitting right in the middle of the hub where everything happened. You get the scene where the grabber's coming back, Gwen cycling down the road. And it's, I mean, we've got about 17 minutes left. And Max discovers, and you knew it was going to happen, he discovers Finny down in the basement. And rather than take action, he gives it loads of verbal. And in the background, it's set up for shit to go wrong, pals, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and it is brilliant. I love it, because I saw him dying, but I didn't see how. And I thought it was fantastic. It was really good, because it shuts him up very quickly.
Yeah, he's behind him, and the way it's set amazing. At an angle, the door's ajar. So you don't know what's going to happen, but you do, because we've seen these films before, where he brings an axe down, the grabber does, on top of the skull of Max, and that's him. He's out of it. And then he blames Finny for having to, being forced to kill his own brother. And that's when shit gets real. And whilst this is happening, the police are at the opposite address on the other side of the road, and they find where all the bodies are buried. And they kind of think that they've gone to the wrong address, and possibly they've kind of missed their opportunity, don't they, Steve?
Yeah, they go into it. It's the big reveal, isn't it? We're like, oh, what's going to be in the address? Are they going to find it? Go in there, it's empty. The detectives are about to leave, and then some poor cop is like, hold up, there's a door hidden behind something here. And they go downstairs, and they find, obviously, the remains, but then you're left, as a viewer, still thinking, well, where the fuck is Finny?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, then you figure out that he's actually in the property opposite.
Oh, definitely. And that's when you get the kind of our fight scene, which is a bit kind of Home Alone, but it's all works out and it's absolutely brilliant. It's so clever the way it comes to an end. But the grabber goes to kill him, Finny, with an axe, and he swings and he misses. And that gives him the chance to run into the corner where he digs the hole where Bruce said, where he takes the grate off, where all of the paper boy said, and he falls down the hole, breaks his ankle. And then as Robin says, that he's got that phone packed with mud, and he starts beating the shit out of the grabber. And then the other kid says he's got that cord, and he pulls it and he breaks his neck. And before that, you get all of the voices, Kels, on the phone, don't you? Which is so good.
You do. And it is really good because it all comes together and you can see how, in their special way, they've all worked to help him get the same outcome in their own ways. It's really good.
It's amazing. And because you don't know, because it looks like, Steve, when he's climbed up to try and get the grate off the window, that he's going to escape out the window, but he doesn't. And it's a failed attempt, but it isn't, because he uses that to break his ankle. And as you say, Kels, that it's everyone who's died, Steve, has given him separate instructions that all come together like a jigsaw. It's so clever, isn't it?
Yeah, essentially, everyone before Finny, all of their failures lead to this. And although he doesn't particularly use their advice in the way they've given it, yeah, they've all played a part in, ultimately, the grabber's death.
Yeah, and he snaps his neck just after he hears everyone's voice.
It's for you.
Welcome to the nightmare end of your pathetic little life.
You don't have much time.
Today's the day, motherfucker.
I can't kill you, hijo de puta. So Finn is gonna do it for me.
Finn's arm is mint!
And he escapes, no thanks to the police whatsoever, and he's reunited with Gwen. And then Terrence comes out, and again, he's really apologetic. He's very, very humble as to the way he's treated them, nearly losing them. It's taken this possibly to realise, will things change? And it's lovely because it's left with them just leaning against each other, and Finny goes back to school, and he is the man, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, after that, to be fair, he just goes into school pretty casually. Oh, yeah, I was just kidnapped for a few days, but, you know, I've really got to get on with this science project. It seems very strange.
He's got his girl, though, isn't he? The one he's finally hooked up with, who he liked.
Yeah, Donna. Call me Finn, bitch.
Yeah, and the film ends. It's so good. I just love the way it's tied together. It's everyone has their moment, and you finally kind of get an arc of Gwen as well. and Finn. It's just brilliant, but I'd love to have known the backstory, but that's the end of it. Girls, how would you rate this film?
I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I thought the kids were amazing, little actors. You genuinely got invested in them. I would have liked a bit of a backstory to understand more about their mum. And to give a little bit more information, but I'd give it a 3 out of 5. I'd say to people to watch it.
Wow, 3 out of 5. That could be one of the highest scores that you've given it. And you hadn't seen this before the podcast, before we did this. It's a new one to you, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And would you recommend it to anyone?
Yeah, I'd say it's worth a watch, yeah.
And does it make you want to go and watch Sinister, more things with Ethan Hawke? Have you watched him in the many films before?
I don't, not that I'm aware of, no. But yeah, I'd quite like to see, you told me about another one as well.
Sinister.
Not Sinister, something Purge. Else. That one. Yeah, yeah, I'd watch both of those from what you've said about them and stuff. Yeah, I would. I think if they're like that, it would be quite good.
Yeah, I think so. Steve, what's your thoughts, mate?
Love Ethan Hawke. I think he's a great actor. All the kids in this, again, great acting. I just wasn't super keen on the story, which seems weird based on how I've spoken about the film. I just think the whole idea of a phone just being a kind of medium to the afterlife is just, it's not my thing. 2 out of 10. I'd say, yeah, watch it. It's not a particularly long film.
2 out of 10?
2 out of 5, sorry. Otherwise, wow, that'll be a 1.
God, that's harsh.
Yeah, we're doing 10s now. Nope, 2 out of 5, sorry. Yeah, just watch it to appreciate the acting. But yes, it's not. I wouldn't go out of my way to watch it again.
Okay, I thought it was an original idea, but I hadn't really seen anything where you talk to the dead through a phone. I thought the story was really good. I really enjoyed it. It's weird. Ethan Hawke's a good actor, but I wouldn't say he's amazing. He does a few kind of weird films, but his best one's Training Day. He's amazing in Training Day, and that is such a good film itself with Denzel Washington. And as I say, in Sinister as well. But I liked him in this. I liked everyone in this. I thought the kids were absolutely incredible. There wasn't, and I don't like children in films, but these were just brilliant. And they really, really made it. I thought it was an original idea, really creepy. It's more of a thriller than a horror. And again, in the 70s, I just thought it worked well because you can do more, you can get away with more when it's set in the 70s because of how lax they were on like their policing and how they didn't understand about the DNA. And it just... people were being killed, like serial killers were so prolific, and I love it. I think this is so good, and I've seen this so many times, and if it was on and there was fuck who else on, I would happily sit down and watch this film. But if it was on and Top Gun Maverick was, then I would obviously sit and watch Top Gun Maverick. But that is our review for The Black Phone, and if you're still listening to it, well done you. Give yourself a pat on the back and check it out. Check all our other podcasts out. We've got so much. Limitless, Jaws 2, Get Out, Cannonball Run. There's just loads on the queue that we've reviewed and are just waiting to be released. But we've got nearly 300 podcasts. So there is just loads and loads of choice. I don't know if we'll be doing one next week, because next Wednesday I am seeing AC/DC at Wembley. So unless we can arrange another day, we may have to do another week without a podcast, I'm afraid. That is bad. Bad habit to get into.
That's very bad.
Yeah, it's poor. It's a poor show, and I'm embarrassed, and I've let everyone down.
You have.
But they're on my bucket list to go and see them, and they are much more important. I cannot wait. I'm buzzing to see AC/DC. They're fucking epic. Kelly, have you heard of AC/DC?
Oh my god, I have heard of AC/DC. Yes,
fantastic. I didn't know if they played them whilst you're in the larder or not. Anything else you want to say about the larder experience at all before we go?
Your penis.
I don't see what that's got to do with a larder.
Nothing, just stating fact for everyone to know.
Again, thanks everyone for listening. Really, really appreciate your time. You enjoy the hot weather, but by the time this is out, it's probably going to be pissing down with rain. So it is swelteringly hot at the moment. You take care. We'll be back next week for another wonderful film review. All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience. And any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.